there's this one analogy that I like to use, and it's a story of a father and a daughter walking down the beach, and there are all these starfish that were washed up on shore, and the daughter gets down and picks up one starfish and throws it back to the ocean. And the dad was like, "Why did you do that? It won't make a difference." And the daughter said, "Well, it did make a difference to one, that starfish." And so for me, when people ask, what does success mean to you? When a fund gets funding through our network, for us, that's a win. In fact, one of the hedge funds that is part of our network got their first endowment LP through our network. And for us, that's what gets us excited.
Ethan Devitt, and welcome to the 50 Faces podcast, a podcast committed to revealing the richness and diversity of the world of investment by focusing on its people and their stories. I'm joined today by Grace Reyes, who is CEO and founder of Tide, the investment diversity exchange, which she founded in January 2020 as a way to connect key industry players to promote diversity and inclusion in the investment industry. She has recently extended Tide's reach beyond the US and has a base in both the US and the UK. Tide is a partner to the largest U.S. public pension plans in their emerging and diverse manager efforts. Welcome, Grace. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we're sitting here in London, but let's go back a little bit at the beginning. So can you tell us a bit where you grew up and what was the arc of your career?
I grew up in Stockton, California. So it's about an hour and a half away from Sacramento and San Francisco. And I went to an inner city high school, so I didn't get any exposure to finance. Until one day I watched Pretty Woman. I was intrigued by Richard Gere, not only by his looks, but his success. And it turns out he was in private equity. And that's what sparked my interest.
Who would have thought that Pretty Woman could inspire careers in finance and financial literacy? So that's very interesting. So that was your first contact with the investment industry. What path did you take then before you came to Tide, between, say, that phase and founding Tide?
So I went to UCLA and I studied economics. And from there, everyone wanted to be an investment banker back in 2004. And right after I got out of college, I had a friend named Wes who was a managing director at Credit Suisse. He got me an interview with the top people that I needed to meet at Credit Suisse, did my interview there. And the last question they asked me was, "What do you like to do for fun?" And investment banking, you usually say, "I like to volunteer, I like to travel," or something like very wholesome. But I was very honest and I was like, "I like to party." And I didn't get the job, I think, not only because of that answer, but basically the fit. But 10 years down the road, I meet up with Wes and I was like, "Wes, you know, if I were to answer that question now, I would still say the same thing. Because of the networking and the partying and meeting people, that's how I was able to meet my network."
And then thinking about Tide, given it is focused on diversity, what was the thought process that led you to perceiving a need? What was the problem Tide was there to solve? I suppose another way of asking that.
So my background's in private equity fundraising, and I've established a network of LPs the past 15 years. These LPs were once analysts and associates, and now they're head of asset classes and CIOs. And so building from that network, I got exposed to DEI in 2017. So I became president of a nonprofit promoting Asian Americans. And from there, I had LPs that were from different ethnic groups, Blacks, Latinos, who would send fund managers to me. And the fund managers are like, "Why, she represents the Asian Americans?" And the LPs were like, "Don't worry, she has the contacts for you." So that's when I thought about it and I realized, why can I promote diversity in general when diversity means different things to different LPs? So whatever you think is diverse, that's on you, right? So for me, I just wanted to gather a group of like-minded individuals to promote diversity. And that's how Tide came about.
And can you then talk about its development? So you started off, I'm sure, with modest aspirations, or maybe not. Maybe you had great aspirations for the beginning, but how did it grow over time? What did it start out like? And what kind of response did you get?
So creating Tide was like spinning out of a fund. I was already doing diversity initiatives. So when I created Tide, I had the backing of CalPERS, CalSTRS, New York State Common, Cambridge Associates supported us. And so I had really big names that were associated with Tide. And that's how I was able to gain a lot of momentum. So we were supposed to host an in-person conference in 2020. And because of COVID, I had to pivot. But because we were a small team, when I said, okay, let's do digital, we were able to switch just like that. So we did digital, we connected people and engaged the community virtually. And actually, while COVID hindered a lot of activities for other industries, I feel like it amplified and accelerated our mission because we were digital instantly. We were born of the digital world. So in LinkedIn, we have a lot of exposure. I have about 25,000 followers on LinkedIn. So that also helped promote the cause and Tide, even though we were a new company.
And thinking about impact. So what is the impact that the events you've had, the connections you've made, how would you say that's made an impact on the audience that you work with?
There's this one analogy that I like to use, and it's a story of a father and a daughter walking down the beach, and there are all these starfish that were washed up on shore. And the daughter gets down and picks up one starfish and throws it back to the ocean. And the dad was like, "Why did you do that? It won't make a difference." And the daughter said, "Well, it did make a difference to one that starfish." And so for me, when people ask, "What does success mean to you?" When a fund gets funding through our network, for us, that's a win. In fact, one of the hedge funds that is part of our network got their first endowment, LP, through our network. And for us, that's what gets us excited.
Well, what tangibly, so you have events, you said you have a lot of digital connection. What do you do in terms of incubation? And what I'm going to ask, it's maybe not the right term, incubation. What do you do in terms of assistance and nourishing that network? An example would be Angela Miller-May. I know you know her well. She was two-time guest on this podcast, and I was amazed at the work she's doing at IRMRF to not only to provide funding to diverse managers, but to almost provide this wraparound service of coaching, feedback, and really nurturing to get them on the ladder, even if they don't fund them at IRMRF, to ensure that they're in a better place to get funding. Is there anything you do in terms of feedback around presentation style, training, other kind of wraparound things you might do for the managers in your network?
I think our event is essentially where people are able to connect. It's different because they say it's like a summer camp where people truly build relationships. LPs let their guards down and they're willing to talk to the managers. Having said that, the trajectory for Tide, I don't think is more events. I don't think we're going to move the needle on diversity by hosting more events. In fact, one of the initiatives that we'd like to work on is to help diverse professionals get on board seats. And that's something new that we're trying to create or trying to explore. But yeah, for now, it's the connections through our event. But eventually, we plan to have more initiatives around DEI.
And in terms of the landscape and how it's changed, because you've been in finance your whole career, pretty much in some shape or form, whether it's in the alternatives arena or now in this sphere, how have you seen the diversity and inclusion picture change? And in particular, given Tide is relatively young, has there been any kind of backlash towards some of these initiatives?
So I only became exposed to DEI initiatives back in 2017. So back in early 2000, when I started my finance career, I didn't even know that there were any diversity initiative. So it wasn't until 2017 that I became exposed to it. And following after, it was the George Floyd movement. And so for me, diversity initiative started in 2017. And when George Floyd happened, it created more momentum. A lot of firms had allocated funds for initiatives for DEI. And now fast forward 2 years later after COVID, you mentioned there's a backlash, and there is. It's gone the other way. Either the initiatives have no longer have funding, or there's lawsuits like Fearless Fund in, I think, Georgia or Atlanta. So there's a backlash with that now. And I actually was at NYSTER's conference last week, and someone asked Tom Lee, how do you respond to this DEI backlash? And he says, I don't respond with words, I respond with actions. And, you know, he's been incorporating diversity within his investment program, and his returns prove it. And I think, you know, as far as backlash, that's the same way with Tide. It's not about what we say, but how we're going to connect these diverse managers or diverse talent to LPs and to companies.
Let's go back to that networking talent you have, clearly wanting to party. I love that. I think we all need to be more honest about what makes us tick, the energy and the sheer joy we can get from being together with people and showing up for people. But how do you approach networking? Because clearly you've cultivated a deep one. Any rules of thumb in terms of always showing up or always following up? Or did it come very naturally to you, or did you have to be intentional about it too?
One of my biggest role model is my mom, and I saw the techniques that, I don't know, it was just ingrained in her. So I think one of the reasons why I'm a good networker or a great networker, I actually like to make people feel good. And I saw this in my mom when she would introduce someone, she would highlight something that she genuinely likes about the person or respects, and that makes a person feel good. And that's what I take with me whenever someone hangs out with me or whenever I meet someone. I want to leave them with an impression that, oh, that was a good feeling, or I felt good. So I think networking is trying to find a way to make that person feel good, but do it in a genuine and authentic way.
It's really interesting. So it's pretty much more about giving almost than taking, and starting with giving. And in terms of what do you see happening to the networking business, I suppose, since COVID, it seems that with more hybrid working, and now the events have returned, it's true, but are people as comfortable in them? Is it as natural a fit? Are they more intense because we had a dearth, we had a shortage of events for 2 years? Do you think there's been any change in people's approach to networking since COVID?
I think if you're a good networker in person, you're a good networker over the phone as well. So I'll give you an example. During COVID, I became connected to new people that I don't know. And we connected and we would keep in touch. And then a few years down the line, we meet in person and we realize that's the first time we actually met. But we're surprised because we connected over the phone or over Zoom. And sometimes you could feel that connection, the vibe. So yeah, I think while COVID has prevented you from seeing people, I think you still could connect. You still could give off a really good vibe over the phone or digital. And I think one key takeaway is have a good vibe and people will
certainly gravitate towards that. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm just curious because one of the biggest lessons that comes out of this podcast series, that anything you'd advise your younger self, I guess this wouldn't be your advice since you were already doing it, would be to network more. Most people in our industry, mid-career, wish they had networked more earlier. And I have college-age kids, and I'm trying to encourage them to use LinkedIn and to think about their network almost like as important as their academic work. How do you, would you encourage someone, you know, just say in college or emerging from college, to approach networking?
You mentioned this earlier, it's more about giving versus taking. I would say when you're networking, it's try to find a way you could add value or try to find a way to make it win-win instead of trying to see what you could get out of the relationship. You should try to think about how you could give to the relationship. And I think it's like social currency. The more you know, think of it as a piggy bank. Each time you do a favor, you add a coin in your social piggy bank. And then in the future, when you need something or you need help, you could tap into that piggy bank.
Looking at some personal reflections now, Tide, I suppose it's coming up on 4 years old this summer. Oh, it's already 4 years old. As of January, sorry, so Tide is 4 years old now. So looking at mentors and sponsors, so I think you've probably been a mentor to many in the circle, but whether it be in the Asian American community or in the networking community as a whole. I think people have learned a lot from looking up to you. Did you have any sponsors or key people of your own or mentors that you learned lessons from that you can mention?
The cool thing about this industry is that there are so many professionals in our industry that we could look up to. So there's no one in particular. I would say I look up to Marcy Frost and Scott Chan, where they're very successful people, but yet they still take time to give back, even though I don't have anything to offer them, but they're there if I have any questions or to be a support. And I think people like that I look up to.
Was there any word of wisdom that you've been told over the years, or piece of advice or creed or motto? I mean, obviously, your whole approach to networking and giving back is a big part of your creed, I'm sure. But anything you can leave us with, or any advice for your younger self?
So I like to take Richard Branson's motto, and that's, if it's not fun, it's not worth doing. And I think Tide gives me an opportunity to enjoy my work, where I get to meet very smart and interesting people, but at the same time, they're my friends as well. So for me, the motto is, if it's not fun, it's not worth doing. So work has to be fun for me.
Well, Grace, thank you so much for the light you are in our industry. I think now that we're sitting here in person, radiant is a word that jumps off the page for me, but also when I see your posts on LinkedIn and the clear joy you have from connecting people and amplifying them and the industriousness with which you go about it. It is no doubt making a positive contribution to our industry, even in a challenging time like today. So thank you for doing what you do. And I'll invite our listeners to follow you on LinkedIn, because it will bring their day some joy, and also to follow Tide and your events. So thank you for coming here and sharing your insights with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
I'm Ethan Devitt. Thank you for listening to the 50 Faces podcast. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear from more inspiring investment professionals and their personal journeys, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest.